Well, in addition to discussing more of consciousness with Mark Gober and End to Upside Down Living, we will take your phone calls this hour on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back. Mark Gober with us, of course, as we talk about his work in End to Upside Down Living. And Mark, you said this book will be available next month, but Amazon's taking pre-orders now, isn't it?
Yes, it is. And it's also available on Kindle right now.
Excellent. What's your next project?
That's a good question. I'm on the board now of the Institute of Noetic Sciences, so very involved with the science. Edgar Mitchell's group. It's been around since the 70s, and I think it's a really important organization because it's one of the few places in the world where these topics can be studied scientifically, phenomena like energy healing, mind-matter interactions. At many academic institutions, those sorts of things are just not allowed.
Without ridicule, by the way.
Right. Right. It's a very collegial environment, and hoping to grow the science that the amazing science they're doing.
I miss Edgar Mitchell. Apollo 14 astronaut walked on the moon, would do mine experiments on his way to the moon. Great guy. He was a great guy.
Well, I never got to meet him, George.
Oh, you would have really gotten to like him. He was just a decent human being, and I first got to know him in my St. Louis days, when he wrote his book, The Way of the Explorer, and got him on the show locally. But then when I started doing Coast to Coast, he stayed even a closer friend, and we would meet him at events and things like that. And just what was so cool about it, Mark, is you're shaking hands with a guy who was on the moon. I mean, how many people have done that?
It's remarkable.
Sure was.
Yeah.
Sure was.
But what he's done with IONS, I think, it's such an important organization, especially given where we are scientifically in the world. To have a place that's dedicated to studying these phenomena, I think it's just going to become more and more important. And as we talked about, the implications of the science, that's what I'm really interested in. Mind-matter interactions, energy healing, telepathy, that suggests the view of reality that we've been taught conventionally is incorrect, and it has major social implications.
I want you to find a book by my late aunt, Shafika Karagula, Karagulla, called Breakthrough to Creativity. She had a psychiatric practice and decided to devote her life to telepathy and all these, incredible supernatural things. But read that book, Mark. I think you'll like it.
Okay. Wrote it down. Thank you.
All right. Let's go to take some calls. Let's go to Beth Ann in the state of Iowa. Welcome to the program. Hi, Beth Ann.
Good evening, gentlemen, and thank you for the affirmation.
Thank you.
I was going to talk about a situation that I had today.
Okay, what happened?
Well, my husband and I were visiting my son in Iowa, where we used to live. We were on our way home. We held hands. We smiled at one another, and a deer crossed the windshield.
Oh, my God. Is he okay, the husband?
Well, my husband's okay. I'm okay. The car's not so good. I made him back up because if we hit her and she was going to go, I wanted to be there with her.
Oh, my God. And the deer, of course, passed on.
He was gone.
Sure. Yeah. What do you mean gone? Like disappeared?
Nowhere. She came out of nowhere and she went into nowhere.
Was it nighttime when this happened?
No, it was sunset. We were on our way to Chicago. Well, we live in Bristol, Wisconsin.
Yeah. Well, maybe her body went flying.
So random. But the thing is, this is what I'm going to talk about, is that I feel like a few months ago, I decided not to be squelched anymore.
You were tired of being held back.
Right. And now I feel like I didn't want to leave yet, and he wanted to go to work. And I don't know, how do you shut it off, Mark?
Mark, do you shut it off? I'm not sure.
Well, one of the things that I've uncovered in this awakening process, where we awaken to our true nature and kind of set an intention in that direction, is that we become more susceptible to learning lessons as we evolve ourselves. And sometimes those lessons can be pleasurable, but other times I have a chapter entitled, or a section entitled, It's Not All Roses. Because when we learn, sometimes it can come through difficulty and challenge. So that's actually helped me a lot in my life as I've been on this journey where I've encountered challenges. I've now been able to recontextualize them, where I say, wait, this is really painful. But in the context of my evolution, the reason that this situation is so bothersome is because I kind of have a warped view of the situation and of reality. So then I remind myself of what's might be happening. And I say, what could I learn from this and how could I evolve myself?
Absolutely. And let's check in. Beth Ann, I'm glad you two are at least okay and the car's demolished, but that can be replaced.
Thank you, gentlemen. The irony is that we doused ourselves in holy water and walked the Stations of the Cross underneath the geode grotto.
Before or after the event?
Just before we left.
Oh, my God.
Oh, wow.
That saved
you. So glad you're okay.
It saved you. Thank you. Horrible. Now, the deer, she can't find. It either got hit and went flying off somewhere, you know, the body, or maybe it was supernatural. What do you think, Mark?
I've just encountered more and more strange things. It's hard to know.
It sure is. Mike in Denver, Colorado is with us. Welcome to the program, Mike. Nope, he's not there. Let's go to Vanna in Jacksonville, Florida, east of the Rockies. Hi, Vanna. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thank you, gentlemen. It's a pleasure speaking.
Go ahead, sir.
Okay. I'm kind of a shy person, so this is not easiest. When I was very young, my mother would sit with me and talk, and I would just talk about things, about God and how that I felt that he was an entity, he was everything, he knew everything, he was everything that ever could be, but he could not experience himself. So what he had to do was to create a world in which people with souls would choose lives and live those lives so that this entity could experience himself. And of course, I was probably 9, and my mother said, where the heck did you learn that, you know? And as I grew older, I had all kinds of telepathy. I had apparitions trying to tell me when a friend was in Vietnam that his father, and they walked right through the wall, you know. And I know that it was a conscious being. There were 3 of them, and they were telling me that he was going to be very sick. And I just said, well, what can I do, you know? And, of course, I told my mother, and she said I was dreaming. That was my experience as a child, was everything was a dream. Consequently, as I got older, I really couldn't find anyone in the paranormal spectrum that understood what I understood. I know that Mark, you spoke about it just a few minutes ago, and you said that you learn things, and sometimes it's like somebody pushes me through a door and slams it behind me, and everything is different. And I see the world through different eyes. It's the most amazing experience. And then I spend maybe a year learning to think, you know, in different terms on that level.
Well, here's somebody, Mark, who uses consciousness the right way.
Well, you sound very tapped in at a young age to be able to understand these concepts, which people have been talking about for millennia. So I hope that a lot of the science that's coming out from the Institute of Noetic Sciences, the University of Virginia, and other places are validating the things that you have personally experienced.
And I got to tell you, though, the more you do it, the more experienced you get, don't you, Mark?
I think so. I think the more that we acknowledge the reality of these phenomena and kind of set our intention in that direction, there seems to be a pattern where people have more of these experiences the more tapped in they are.
We're going to Mike now in Denver, Colorado. Go ahead, Michael.
Good morning, George. Thank you so much for taking my call.
Sure.
And Mark, thank you so much for your presentation tonight. I have to say, you know, as a young person myself, Mark, your work means a lot to, you know, myself as a millennial. And I really hope that more younger people will get involved because this is some really cool stuff you're doing. The name of the book, An End to Upside Down Thinking, I think that that's a great title for a book because so many of us find ourselves in that position of upside down thinking and how we can kind of fix it is a great premise for a book. My question tonight relates to consciousness and unrecognized potential. How do you feel that we can correctly recognize potential that is unlocked? Because, you know, our brain is only operating at about 10% at any given time. So I was wondering what is the best way that we can find that unrecognized potential? Thank you.
Well, thank you for that question. That's a great question. And it's something I touch on in my new book, An End to Upside Down Living, with the notion of surrender. And we talked about the one mind, this kind of universal consciousness that we're all a part of. We're an individual whirlpool within the broader stream. But as an individual whirlpool, we are inherently limited, including in terms of our intelligence. So one of the corollaries of this idea of the one mind is that the one mind is intelligent because we are part of the stream, so it has some intelligence in it. But because this stream of consciousness is the basis of all reality and all the amazing complexity in this massive universe, it's not a big leap to say that the one mind itself, the universal consciousness, is of some unimaginable level of intelligence. So when we recognize that as an individual, we are not, number one, we're not the creator of our intelligence, we're just tapping into the intelligence. And that notion of trying to tap into the intelligence that's beyond us is one of intellectual humility, number one, to acknowledge our own limitations. And number two, I think that allows us to let in more of these rays of consciousness, let in the broader stream, so that we can be more of our essentially authentic selves and execute whatever our potential is to the fullest. So to me, it starts with this mental intention to surrender to the broader intelligence. And then that might manifest in our lives in various ways to allow us to maximize our potential.
Let's go to Linda in the state of Nevada. Welcome to the program. Hi, Linda. Hope you're safe and sound.
Yes, I am. I actually live about an hour and a half away in the middle of nowhere on 5 acres of hay. Huh. So, but I came in to Reno to stay at a friend's guest house. And my deal is I have been living through my heart, through intuition, by putting my hand on my heart and tapping into what's good and what's best, not money-wise or not intellectually. I'm a lawyer, but, you know, but I try to get out of that to get the right answer, mm-hmm. which is whatever is positive in the universe. And so my question really is, it's kind of hard. I know how to separate my mind from my heart and our truest, intuition, our truest intent on this earth, each of us. So I get into myself first, and if then I can help someone else, I can. But I'm kind of confused when you call it consciousness versus intuition, or is that the same thing?
It's a great question.
You know what I mean?
They're very much interrelated. So I would say that consciousness is that which experiences. So it's the thing that is experiencing our life, it's our awareness. And an intuition is a feeling that we have that's within that consciousness that might tell us to go in a certain direction. And the intuition, I think, is distinct from the mind, as you say, in many ways. It's also distinct from our intellect, which wants to kind of logically lay things out in a step-by-step fashion. Whereas intuition or heart-based decision-making is kind of a feeling that we can't really put our finger on. We can't always rationally say why we went a certain way, but an intuition is a knowingness that we can't describe sometimes. And this is something that's very new to me as someone who was so logical for most of my life, is to learn to say the intellect is important to use as a tool, but so is intuition, even if we can't sometimes reverse engineer where that intuition came from. And I would argue that the intuition is sort of the one mind, this broader consciousness that we're a part of. It's a way of it kind of nudging us in a certain direction.
Tell me more about Kundalini, Mark.
So this is, Kundalini is a term related to an energy that is stored at the base of the spine, which becomes activated when people go through this awakening process. And for many people who have not experienced it, it sounds kind of like a mythical idea, but there are many people, one I mentioned in my book, Dr. Bonnie Greenwell, who studies people who have had these awakenings where the energy becomes activated at the base of the spine and it physically is felt throughout the body. And that can result in all sorts of things, including what are known as kriyas, where the body spontaneously, for example, will move into a yoga posture, even if someone doesn't know the yoga posture, or there might be gyrations of the body, or the person might have emotional upheaval in certain ways as the person is kind of going through this awakening process.
Next up, let's go to Jeff in Wyoming. Welcome to the program, Jeffrey.
Hey, thanks, George. It's good to finally talk to you.
Thank you.
I just wanted to give my 2 cents worth of what I think consciousness is at an absolute base level is a sense of time. If you think about that, no matter what, you have to have that sense of time to have consciousness. That's just what my thought is. I'll go ahead and let you respond to that. I'll go off the air now. I appreciate it. Thank you.
All right. You want to think about that, Mark? Sense of time.
Well, thank you. Thank you for mentioning time. That's a really important topic. It's one I've mentioned in both of my books. The time, in a sense, is a human construct. So when we think about past, present, future, something that happened in the past, I had lunch yesterday. When I think about that event, it is a memory that occurs right now. But through our intellect, we've kind of done this complex calculation where we say this event happened yesterday. And the same thing goes for the future. If we're thinking about a future event, the thinking of it occurs right now. So time is something, it's another one of these topics, I think, that might be beyond human comprehension in many ways, because it seems based on our own experience, if we want to be very introspective about it, there's only an ever-present now that seems to be constantly changing, but we are inferring a past because we remember something and we think it happened, but our memory occurs now, and we think about the future, but that occurs now. So there is a relationship between consciousness and time, because if there is an ever-present now, that is kind of a form of time. And in that ever-present now is our consciousness that is aware on its own.
Do you think we'll get to the point, Mark, where people will be readily able to communicate with each other by just mind?
I really don't know. I think right now we're pretty far away from that, given that mainstream science doesn't acknowledge non-local consciousness. So I think we need more research, but I think also more media attention for important scientific findings. So I'll give an example. In 2018, there was a paper published in American Psychologist Journal, which is the official peer-reviewed academic journal of the American Psychological Association. So mainstream stuff, written by Dr. Etzel Cardenia from Lund University in Sweden. And he looked at the combined statistics for phenomena like telepathy, precognition, psychokinesis, remote viewing, and showed the accumulated statistical evidence that these are real phenomena, and the journal allowed the paper to come in and to publish it. So that's, I think, a big step forward. And I think the more that happens, the more we can get our great minds in the world thinking about that question, George, of how can we use these abilities, which appear to be innate for every single person, even if they're sometimes subtle.
Good point. Mark, we're going to take a quick break. We'll come back and take final phone calls with you in just a moment here on Coast to Coast AM. Mark Gober, our special guest, his latest book, of course, is called An End to Upside Down Living. And when we come back, we will be going to Canada, Texas, Los Angeles, you name it. We'll go to it in a moment on Coast to Coast AM as we talk about consciousness, the ability to use it or even not. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. We're back with our final segment with Mark Gober. His book is called An End to Upside Down Living. How did you come up with those titles, Mark?
I have a really good literary agent, Bill Gladstone. When I came to him with the manuscript of my first book, he said, An End to Upside Down Thinking. And for the second book, when I wanted to write about how we would live accordingly, it seemed logical to make the next book An End to Upside Down Living.
Now, what do your colleagues say about your writing?
Well, when I first embarked on this path, my colleagues were very supportive. The field is in the area of intellectual property as it relates to business, so we're constantly dealing with companies that are innovating versus what people used to do. A patent, by definition, is novel and non-obvious relative to something in the past, so they were very accustomed to challenging paradigms. So they were very supportive, but actually, at the end of last year, I gave notice that I would be transitioning out of my partner role, so I spent the first few months of the year working part-time and have since left to focus on all this stuff full-time.
You have written about channeling, and I find that fascinating in a book about consciousness. Explain that.
The phenomenon of channeling is a form of mediumship. So mediums are people that claim they can communicate with the deceased. Channeling is allowing in this kind of external consciousness, some kind of intelligent being outside the body, where that being, alleged being, speaks through the vocal cords of the living person. And it sounds like like science fiction, and another one of these topics I never would have even considered a few years ago. But if we view the brain as this filtering mechanism, antenna, receiver, it's like the brain, in some cases, is able to tap in to something that's not physical so that a new form of intelligence comes through. And in fact, for my podcast, Where Is My Mind, I interviewed Helene Wabe, who is the director of research at the Institute of Noetic Sciences, where they study this scientifically. So they study people who allege they have channeling abilities, and they say, okay, let's see it. And there are a number of fascinating things that they found. Number one, they place random number generator machines in the room while this person is allegedly channeling some other intelligent being. So this machine, a random number generator, randomly spits out zeros and ones. And what you'd expect over time is that there would be 50% ones and 50% zeros. It's like flipping a coin. So that's what a random number generator machine normally produces. And what the scientists wanted to see is, well, what happens when there's a channeler in the room? Does the channeler have a physical effect on the machine? Because we do see that in other experiments. Dr. Roger Nelson, who runs the Global Consciousness Project, exactly. This was done at Princeton as well, where people tried to make the machine produce more ones and zeros with their minds, and they were able to do it with a very small but highly statistically significant effect. This was found with channelers as well. But the channelers weren't trying to influence the machines. It just seems that there was some kind of energy exerted by the channelers in these preliminary studies. So that's really interesting finding number one. But also, people typically ask, you know, when I talk about channeling, they'd say, well, is that kind of a mental disorder? Is it like a dissociative personality disorder, multiple personalities? It's just a pathological. And what the scientists have found by studying brain waves and also looking at the pathology of people that have certain illnesses is that channeling seems to be distinct. So something is going on where people are tapping into another form of intelligence.
All right, let's go back to the phones. We go to Mimi in Midland, Texas. Welcome to the show. Hi, Mimi.
Hi, George, and thank you, and hello to your guest.
You're very welcome.
Hello. This has been fascinating to me, but what has stood out in my mind is Mark's bottom line on it, that what we really need is a major quantum leap in consciousness. And I don't think ours is the agony of awaiting for that, but I don't think we're very close to it.
How close are we to that leap, Mark?
This is the big question. What is the critical mass that some people would say? And what I've kind of debated for myself is it a certain number of people that would need to have a certain type of shift in consciousness, or could a small number of people have a very large shift within their own consciousness? And is that enough to exert an effect on the world? And I don't know the answer to it, but I think the best we can do individually for ourselves, especially in light of the near-death experience research and the life review, is to try to do the best to perfect ourselves and to clear whatever clouds we have blocking the rays of consciousness. And as we do that individually, I think we have the best chance of channeling this greater intelligence and doing the best we can in the world. And I think that's all we can do.
How about George in Corpus Christi, Texas? Hey, George, go ahead.
Hi. A few weeks ago, I was talking to your guest host, Richard Thiriot, and he had a guest on, but he was talking about malevolent consciousness. And there were more like, I don't know, there were physical beings. But anyway, I don't remember his guest's name, but my question is on the idea of benevolent consciousness, because, you know, God works in mysterious ways. So my question is collective consciousness, is it more powerful as a collective, like all of us human beings collectively working together, or is individual consciousness, such as a Jesus Christ or a Buddha, like your guest suggested earlier, he mentioned those two names. But what I'm getting at is the order of things. When I called in that day with your guest host, Richard, Mr. Thiriot, That's what my question was about. What was the order of that malevolence?
Did they answer that for you?
Well, he kind of, he did. He did it in a good way. He said, well, I'm not there yet, but that's a good thing. I think I'm going to start looking into that because he didn't.
Well, let's check in with Mark. Mark, here's George's thoughts. Is the one as strong as the many, if I can paraphrase that?
Mm-hmm. Well, let me start with this question of malevolence, because it is something that comes up a lot in my research.
Which is the same as evil.
Yes, so some kind of a negative intent versus, you know, what we see in the life review, where what is emphasized is how we treat others and try to treat people well. That seems to be the innate nature of consciousness, and that when that nature is veiled, we see what we might call evil behavior. And that does seem to occur in people that channel. When they channel a being, sometimes that being isn't always good. But that's one of the cautions I give in my book, and that channeling is in the caution section for that reason, because someone could be channeling an intelligent being, but that being might not be have our best interest in mind, even though it's very intelligent. And I give an example of a woman named Gina Lake, who talked about this on a Buddha at the Gas Pump podcast interview. She was channeling, and there were beings that came in and told her she should quit her job. And because those beings were correct about some other things, she listened, and it ended up being a terrible decision. And then she heard the beings, she claims, that they were laughing and told her that she should kill herself.
Oh, my God, and they tricked her.
They tricked her. That's what she said. She was deceived, and I think she gave up channeling for a while, but now is very conscious of what types of beings she's tapping into. So then there's a question, I think, what the listener was alluding to is, well, how do we get around this then? Do we need one individual to carry the way, or is it kind of a collective effort? And I think it's a combination. I think we all do the best we can individually, and we just don't know what effect that's going to have. And I'll give an example from what's known as chaos theory. Mathematically speaking, a butterfly flapping its wings in China can cause a hurricane in New York. That's what how the math works out. It's known as nonlinear dynamics, where a tiny change in initial conditions can have a massive effect that you couldn't have even predicted if you used your mind. So this is where I think we might be, and this is maybe how the field of consciousness works. As we improve ourselves individually, no matter who we are, and this is one of the points of my new book, is that each of us has a lot of power individually, so much power, no matter what our status is in society. Because when we shift our consciousness, it's going to have a shift on the physical world in ways that we probably can't imagine.
Absolutely. Next up, let's go to Benjamin in Los Angeles. Welcome to the show. Hi, Ben. Go ahead, sir.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. You guys have covered many, many, many different intersecting topics, so I have a few comments about all of them, but I don't know if you have enough time. To talk about the greater consciousness, which I guess it's sort of like God, speaking about God in a different, mm-hmm. using different terminology, and our connection to Him and how this whole thing, you know, is put together. You talk about good and evil. You talk about physical versus metaphysical and how they intersect or interact, you know, in regards to the brain versus something which is above or disconnected from the physical form. Interesting thing that I thought about is the term cloud computing. Everything is being stored in the cloud. I think that would be a very beautiful example in terms of how we can understand our connection to the bigger consciousness. So the memories are not stored in our physical being, but rather in the cloud.
Well, that's an interesting concept, Mark, the consciousness cloud.
I love it. I think that's a very accurate analogy. To the extent that we can try to put words around something that's very abstract, it's like that we're almost mobile devices that are tapping into the broader stream, the cloud, so to speak. So this, you raise a great point about memory. The conventional thinking in neuroscience is that memories are somehow stored in the brain, and neuroscientists are trying to figure out what parts of the brain are storing and holding our memories. But maybe those parts of the brain are just tapping into the cloud, so to speak, to access memories that are not housed in the brain or the body.
We've got Nancy in San Jose, California now on the west of the Rocky Line. Hi, Nance. Go ahead.
Hi. Thank you very much. Mark, I'd like to ask you about your books. Do you speak about the gift of the Holy Spirit?
Mark, go ahead.
I don't use that specific term, because I think there are many ways that one could define it, and I've heard different ways of construing Holy Spirit and the gifts. But the way I would analogize it to what I'm talking about is that we are part of this broader consciousness, this broader intelligence and energy. And that energy as an intelligent force is something that we can be tapping into. And I think some people could call that gifts, miracles of the Holy Spirit. I think that's one way to call it.
Interesting take. Joe in Long Island, New York. It's your turn, Joseph. Go ahead.
Yeah. Hi, Mark. I'm thinking of the word legitimacy. You know, I positioned myself by working in national parks where I could do some of these hikes. And I remember doing an all-day hike where I was up and down mountains that were 10,000 feet. So doing several of them, it probably added up to Kilimanjaro up and down. So that kind of legitimized me being a decent mountain, you know, trekker. So I would ask, as you shift, what legitimizes doing this, shifting into this kind of mode? What would legitimize it for you?
Well, I think in terms of just the general topic of legitimacy, we need more science. And my first book is dedicated to the incredible amounts of science that already exists. We didn't even talk about the U.S. government's remote viewing program where psychic spying was actually used for practical purposes.
Yep. Many of those remote viewers were on the show, Mark.
There you go. So there's a lot of science already, but I think there needs to somehow be more of the science, but also more mainstream attention that's given to it, because it's so paradigm shifting. And I think that would help legitimize the ideas, bring more intelligent minds in to ask some of these nuanced questions. And I think that would hopefully allow science to shift. But even beyond that, individually, we don't have to wait for the mainstream to catch up, because, like I said, we don't know how powerful it can be for an individual to have a shift and for an individual to experience things that legitimize the ideas for that person.
Well, if you were someone listening to this program and you really wanted to start into this, what would your first steps be?
I think reading about the topics, and the reason I wrote these books, George, and my podcast, Where's My Mind, is to give people a starting point, because I'm summarizing scientific findings throughout many decades and many different researchers. So those books, I think, serve as a starting point, and then they give source material for other people to look at. So scientists like Dr. Dean Radin, who's the chief scientist at the Institute of Noetic Sciences, Dr. Rupert Sheldrake, Russell Targ, who ran the U.S. government's program, the researchers at the University of Virginia who study near-death experiences and children with past life memories. So looking at some of those credible organizations and see what they've written, if you wanted to start scientifically, I would start there. But also if you wanted to start having experiences yourself, I have found meditation in the last few months to be extremely powerful. And I went on two silent meditation retreats with spiritual teachers, and just being in that silence caused shifts in my own consciousness, but also I started to feel palpable energy, which I had never felt before. So things like where the third eye is located, I started to feel pounding there and feeling stuff throughout my body. And I think these are innate abilities that we all have that we can access through things like meditation.
Let's go to Don in Alberta, Canada. We'll get you in here real fast, Don. Welcome to the program.
Having me on. Mark, I really admire your attention to detail and ability to feel things out. You're talking about God earlier. Once you've been to the other side, you don't have to have a near-death experience. You can use meditation to get there. God is love, compassion, and understanding. Down in the physical plane, things get a little bit harsh because we don't pay attention. Human beings have amazing potential, but they have to take the time and pay attention to focus on what they need to do in order to become and accept the fact that we are all part of a collective consciousness, and we are one. But I do have, this is my question, and I've been puzzled over it for a while, is why is when humans come in contact with aliens, they can access our, because I've played with, I've always had like dreams of the future and stuff. I've turned it off because it makes life too boring, but I still get a little bit of it coming through. But aliens, when they come in contact with human, they can access our brains directly, and they know what our intent is. Like if I'm driving somewhere, I want to see how the trip is. I project my energy down the road and visualize myself doing it, and I see how it feels.
There's been talk that aliens have the ability to communicate via telepathy, Mark.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is actually a theme that I have seen in some of my research. Comparisons of near-death experiences with alleged alien communication. So Dr. John Mack, who's a Harvard psychologist and a Pulitzer Prize winner, studied the phenomenon of abductions, and he concluded from a psychological standpoint that these are not hallucinations. And Dr. Kenneth Ring, who has studied near-death experiences, wrote a book called The Omega Project, which compares these alleged alien encounters with near-death experiences. And near-death experiences cause massive shifts in consciousness very quickly. But like the listener said, meditation can do that as well. But a near-death experience is dramatic. What the researchers have found, I believe, is that these alien encounters also cause consciousness shifts.
Absolutely. Mark, thank you for being on the program. Up next, another Mark joins us, Mark Pitstick, as we talk about soul proof.